Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Chills. It's another week that's gone by, another 3 points we didn't pick up, but there you go, it's the end of the season. Looks as though we're not going to stay in 11th though. We could be going lower and lower. I think we're in 12th now. How low can we go? Well, talking of lowness, I've got some of the finest, lowest, down-to-earth Chelsea fans of them all. It's Andy Saunders. I couldn't find where to go with low other than being really rude. So I decided to pull back and not be really rude, Andy. Is that
calling
strange?
Me a lowlife. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in 11th, mate. So, you know.
Didn't we make 12th? I think we're 12th now, aren't we? Palace
Beagles
went above.
Have gone above us.
Yeah, Beagles have gone above. Yeah. Are you not paying attention?
The table I'm looking at is out of date then. So.
Yeah, it is.
That's on the BBC.
That's a shock.
Have you refreshed your browser since you last loaded it?
Well, what, loaded it like 10 minutes ago?
How very strange.
It says 11.
That is very odd.
How many games have we played? 33?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it hasn't refreshed.
No, yeah, it hasn't. Yes, you see, I'm looking at the table on the BBC.
This is entertaining podcast.
It's fascinating. I'm getting 12th. Isn't that amazing on the BBC website?
Because we are 12th, Kerry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Andy,
and we've
him.
Only played 32 games as well.
Yes, exactly. And that's
not 33.
No, I'm just saying.
What I'm looking at.
Oh, what? It says, so we played 32 games.
Yeah.
But it says 11th on the BBC website.
No, we're 12.
I know, but tell you what I'm looking at the moment. On the match report from Brentford.
Yeah, but that match report is a week out of date.
Oh, because of the...
That's not a live table
you're looking at. Well, I would have thought that the table, because it was on the website, would have updated with
it. No, it's on the article, isn't it? Okay.
Should we explain how the internet works, Andy?
This is going to be a good podcast.
I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole, but I would have thought that the table would have updated even if the match report didn't, if you see what I mean. But
All I know is
Spurs are so bad that at this rate, we're going to catch
them. Very funny. That was very funny.
Oh, but they provide... I've had two of my best moments of pleasure in this last 7 days, and then a little bit of misery. They pulled it back against Man U. But, I mean, honestly, Liverpool, that was hysterical. I mean, Liverpool should have been about 18-0 up. I mean, it was...
Kerry, you got it wrong. Just listen to Ryan Mason's quote. Spurs were the better team by a country mile.
Amazing.
I tell you, country miles are strange things. I tell you.
When
I don't know what a country mile is in bloody... Where are they based? On the end of the central line, round that way in Essex.
Somewhere like that. But anyway.
Chigwell. Some dump.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. And that last listener in Chigwell has now gone. But
good.
So when Spurs Muggy. Were beaten by Newcastle by 6, I was actually in a first aid training course. I had to refresh my first aid certificate for my cricket activities.
Did you refresh it as browser. Good as your Premier League
well,
table?
Well, that's the BBC's fault. BBC weren't in charge of this. I'm sitting next to my...
I love it, Kerry.
Sitting, that's honestly not even a funny joke. Why are you... Why? Honestly.
It's just brilliant.
But look at him.
And we were both saying it at the same time. Brilliant.
Anyway, let Andy finish his story, please. No interruptions. Remember, that's still not allowed.
I'm taking a screenshot of you wearing your ridiculous hoodie, by the way.
It's not ridiculous.
Completely lost my thread now. So when they got beaten by 6, I was in my first aid course, and I was sitting next to my friend who's a Spurs fan, and my friend was covered in bandages because we were doing like bandaging, and as each goal went in, another bandage went on. So by the end of it, he was sitting there with his head down, covered in bandages, having been beaten, looking like he'd been beaten up by the 6
like
goals
a mummy.
That had gone in. Anyway, we should all ask at Spurs. But the funniest thing was Klopp doing his hamstring. That was hilarious.
Oh, it was. And, you know, OK, here's a point. I mean, I was going to talk about Klopp because he's been really super irritating this week. Not only for that and going into the official's face and everything and got to come up and straight away. He should also have been sent off. He is getting very, very gobby, very, very annoying. And... he started going on about what Chelsea had done wrong. I mean, I was absolutely gobsmacked by his thought process that it was fine to talk about Chelsea, to say, oh, well, they didn't really understand what it takes to do the rebuilding job, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Gary, were you shocked when you heard Klopp coming out so clearly in his...
No, I wasn't, because he's lived on Merseyside for, what, 8 years now? And he's getting to become more and more like a Scouser of every season. So the self-righteousness, I am not surprised for a second. And if you're listening, Liverpool, tune out.
Yeah. And Andy, I mean, what did you make of it? I mean, it's wrong, isn't it, what he's doing?
Well, I mean, what he's doing, he's not managing his football club very well. And I think he's kind of losing his mind as a result of it. I mean, all of this is coming from a place of, you know, huge... anger and annoyance at his team. You know, I mean, what annoys me about Jurgen Klopp is the kind of smiley, everyone's favourite uncle thing until things aren't going his way, and then he's up in the face of the fourth official, or he's making outrageous comments about referees, or he's just acting like a complete dick. And you know, and he shouldn't be going anywhere near opinions about other people's football clubs until he sorts his own out. I've never really liked him, to be honest. And, you know, I think it's hilarious that, you know, that he thinks he can take some kind of moral high ground on what we're doing.
Yeah.
He's a Scouser, of course he does.
No, it's pure self-righteousness. And it's just irritating that I think, though, people are starting to see through him that actually... he is such a lovely bloke when everything's going right and things are working. But as soon as it gets tricky, he turns into this really not very nice man who actually is calling things out that just aren't his business. They're not his concern. So, you know, and let's hope that there's no chance they get Mason Mount to help them out of trouble, because they need someone like him in that team. When you look at them, they're just... I don't know, disjointed. Anyway, I'm not going to comment on Liverpool. I don't really care about them enough to comment on them. But
having just spent the last 5 minutes doing so.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's just
why'd you bring them up, mug?
Well, because I wanted to hear your views, and now I've had
them. What makes me laugh, just quickly on him as well, what made me laugh was on Match of the Day, he was like, yeah, if Ryan Mason thinks this about the team, then he should be thinking about his own team, yeah. But then he's on Sky going mental about the referee and everything. And it's like, mate, the contradiction is just a mug.
Yeah.
It's all right. Basically, what he wants is it's okay for him to go around sounding off about anything and anyone and everything. But the moment someone else does. But they got away with it. Jota should have been off yesterday.
That was a crazy decision. Anyway, let's not talk about them.
Richarlison should have had a penalty.
Let's not talk about them.
Yeah. Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, okay, well, let's...
Do we have to talk about Chelsea? I'm trying to deflect as much as we can.
I know, I can
Why
see
don't
that.
We talk about the blueprint and what's coming next week?
No, Harry? Let's not do that. Let's give Andy some space, because we will get to that at some point, but not right now. Let's try and do a
slightly more subtle plug for your adventures, Gary. Rather than
he's known as the flying mallet,
shoehorn it into the podcast like a whatever it is. But more than happy to talk about the blueprint, because very exciting. Are you anywhere near finishing it yet?
Yeah.
I mean, you said that to me 6 months ago, so I'm taking it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, but then what happened 6 months ago was more things have happened. Really? we better put this in.
No, also, what has happened, and this is honestly the truth, I know I always say never trust anyone who says the word honestly, okay, but this is the truth, is that as we've been progressing and as things have evolved and things like the Ken Bates tapes coming out, we've had people that weren't going to talk to us now wanting to talk to us. So we have to get those people involved, because there are new stories that are appearing that will fascinate and excite every Chelsea fan and people in football as well. So we are slightly extending it by a few weeks here and there. That is it. We have got...
But it's still coming out on the 31st of May. And what we have next week on Wednesday, the 10th of May, is...
The Harding tapes. Would you like to explain, Gary?
Well, they're the Ken Bates tapes, but the Matthew Harding tapes. But they're not a direct response to Ken or anything that Ken's spoken about. But we already had spoken to one of the people that we're releasing a full episode with. And we, on the back of what we did with Ken, we had such a great response that people started asking us, are you doing something similar for Matthew Harding? And we just thought, well, really, maybe we should then, if that's what people want. We didn't realise they'd want that, but we're happy to do that. And we've got all this incredible content. So we're releasing two episodes next week with one person that has subsequently come forward on the back of the Ken Bates tapes and one person that we had spoken to even before we spoke to Ken. So we're releasing them and in the process revealing new details about what Harding's plans were for Chelsea, investment into Chelsea, where that investment would have come from, more insight into what was going on around Stamford Bridge at the time. But also... one thing we keep talking to people about is, Matthew Harding, the man. People talk about him and they think about the Battle of Stamford Bridge. But really, outside of that, even when you read books that were written about him at the time, not much was really known about him beyond Chelsea. So we're getting more detail than that, really, to build a fully rounded character to show people that the name on a stand isn't just a name on a stand.
So, yeah, we're going to flesh it out. So that's where we're going with the blueprint, and that will be out next Wednesday. So
the 10th of May, two episodes then, and then the full eight-part narrative series on the 31st of May, 2023.
Thank you ever so much. Right, that is the end of this public service broadcast, and we now return to the inevitable. There we were. Well, actually, I wasn't. Neither was Gary. And Andy was the only one of the three of us who could manage to make it for the whole game. Chelsea.
Not the whole game.
At home I know.
You're one of those people left early.
I left at half time. I've never done it before. Do you know what? Listen. I run events for a living, right? Big events, important events, expensive events for a living. And we have one mantra when we put these events on, and that is do not bore people. People will come and they'll enjoy it and they'll eat and they'll watch the awards and they'll mingle and they'll socialise, but they won't come back if you bore them. And so, you know, we do everything we can not to bore us. I was bored out of my mind at Brentford. There was nothing to play for. The players weren't up for it. Manager isn't up to it. The fans weren't there. There was loads of empty seats. The fans that were there were mainly on their phones looking at the City-Arsenal game. Half time, my son turned to me and said, should we just go to the pub and watch it in the pub and, you know, watch a bit of the City-Arsenal game, watch us, you know, because we could go to the bar and there'd be screens up. And I was like, I toyed with the idea and I just thought, yeah, sod it. Let's do that. You know, and I was just so dispirited by the whole thing. We left. We went to Frankie's in the ground. We had one screen, had the Chelsea game on it. One screen had the Arsenal game on it. We sat there. We had a drink. And then we went home, and it just, I was just, it was probably my lowest point, really, just watching Chelsea this season. I was bored out of my mind.
Do you not think that says everything, that even the bars inside the ground are showing the City game?
I tell you what, I wasn't the only one. There was quite a few of us in there doing exactly the same thing.
But the idea that even the bar inside the ground is showing another game as well as the Chelsea game,
yeah.
I find that staggering.
Well, they have about 20 screens in there, and so it was like Chelsea game, Arsenal game. So you could watch the thing. And that's why we went there, because we could still watch the Chelsea game, which we did. But, you know, we just didn't want to watch it in the ground with loads of people moaning about it. It just was a terrible atmosphere. I was bored. You know, I shouldn't be bored. You know, I've worked hard all week. You know, I've spent my money. I've got some free time. Last thing I want to do is sit there being bored out of my mind. You know, I'd rather go there and have a chat with my son. Do you know what I mean? And watch it, and, you know, watch the Arsenal City game as well, and then go home. That was much more pleasurable than sitting in the ground. I love Chelsea. I've been going for 40 years. I've never done that before. That says a little bit about this season for me.
Did you feel dirty?
A little bit, yeah. But, you know, not guilty. I have to say, afterwards, no, you know, I had a word with myself and
great.
Said, "What?
Dirty, not guilty."
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I thought, you know, is this the right thing to do? People would probably kill to, you know, to be here and, you know, to have my ticket, you know. But I didn't feel guilty, because it was a decision made with a clear head, and it was a decision made, you know, I weighed it up and I thought about it and I thought, why be bored? You know, why do that? You know, I've been here every game this season, and for many, many, many seasons, I've been here for a game. I'm not someone who leaves 10 minutes before the end. I stay there till the bitter end. Never done this before. Chelsea have done this to me this season. They've bored me. And I just, you know, I wasn't having it, frankly. So that's where it was at. I don't feel I need to justify myself, but I probably need to explain myself a little bit, and that's why.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Fair enough. No, I think I can understand it. You know,
weren't you there, Gary?
Me.
Gary, are you ignoring me?
He was working.
No, I'm listening. I was. What happened was I was doing some scripting with Kerry, and then I recorded him for said scripting, and then I said, "Oh, I'll just get this done and that." And he went, "Oh, I hit my mic." Then I said, "Oh, I'll get this done now," and he went, "Oh, but it's 5:30. I was like, "Yeah." Oh, I was just like, tonight when I turned up late for this podcast, I was too busy editing, and then I got showered and ran to the train station and I missed my train.
Oh, Gary.
He did.
So I walked home and watched it at home.
And can you just apologise to poor Ed as well, your mate?
Oh, yeah, and I've ruined it for my mate Ed, who was meant to go with me.
What did he do in the end?
Went home and...
Was he waiting at the ground?
I don't know. I don't know what he did at home.
What, you mean you've not spoken? He's not returning your calls now?
I was just going to make a bad joke.
Okay, but don't.
But yeah, no, he's in America right now anyway. He's in New York. Hi, Ed.
Yeah.
Hi,
what
Ed.
A mate you are.
Yeah.
At least I...
Well, really? Actually, I saved him.
You saved him, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Because I said, "I'm so sorry about that." And he went, "Yeah, don't worry." Because he knows the score.
And when you were watching it on TV... Did you play rapt attention for 90 minutes?
I ended up having a conversation with Kerry on the phone, but I can't remember what we actually spoke about. What did we speak about?
I think I was reporting in on... Well, we were chatting about stuff. I had the Chelsea game on the main TV and the City-Arsenal game on my iPad at the same time. And I really wanted it to be the other way round because the City game looked really interesting. But yeah, we were chatting and what have you. I think I was reporting to you what Hoddle had said when he saw the team.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because genuinely, I was gutted I missed it. And even though we were crap, I was gutted I missed a game because I hate missing games. And then I was so annoyed I hadn't told Kerry. So then he messaged me and I went, yeah, I'm watching it at home. And he was like, what? And then he called me and then we just spoke about it. Yeah. And what did Hoddle say for the uninitiated, Kerry? What did Hoddle say before the game?
Hoddle was, I've never heard him quite so forthright about Frank. And he caveated everything by saying, I really like Frank. Frank, I think, is a really good bloke. I think he's got a future doing this. I love Frank. But honestly, I look at that team and I'll tell you something now. That team is not going to have a chance at scoring any goals until they've at least made some attacking substitutions. They won't come close. He said, look, I'll probably be proved wrong and they'll be 2-0 up at half time. But I do not see any chances being created by this 11 out there. And I do not see them scoring until probably the second half. It's obvious that he's just trying to shore up shop and save
face. Well, he didn't want to lose, did he?
No, and doesn't want to lose.
I got a call from Louis. Louis called me and he's like, what about that team? And I was just walking home annoyed after missing my train. And I said, yeah, but you see, he's trying not to lose.
But I mean, what does that say about where we're at? We don't, you know, we're trying not to lose against bloody Brentford. I mean, how low have we sunk if that's the ambition? That's awful, Gary.
Well, that's just been this season,
yeah,
isn't
but
it?
But I mean,
this season. I'm surprised it's taken you this long to leave at half time. Because it's been terrible all season. Tuchel, Potter, and now Lampard. It's just been a horrible, horrible season. If you remember, it was like this time last year. Remember when the sanctions came in? And but the stadium was half full and you just felt like the fizz went out of the
before
club.
Before I start spluttering, let me clarify this. Are you making an excuse for Frank here about not wanting to lose? Or are you just stating a fact?
I'm not making excuses.
No, I'm just asking.
No, I don't need to make excuses.
No, but I'm asking. I mean, you sort of said, well, you know, it's obvious what he's trying to do. He's trying not to lose. As if that was I'm just saying, you know, you're saying that it could be interpreted as if that was a sensible thing to do.
No, I think you're at home against Brentford. You shouldn't be playing not to lose.
So we're on the same page. That's all I'm saying.
I don't want Chelsea to play. When we play Man City in a few weeks, I don't want to play not to lose. Yeah. It's reductive.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed reductive. And for me, one of the things that I find shocking, when we know, look, there really isn't probably a likelihood that we're going to get drawn into the relegation battle because of what's going on. So why are
Thank
we not...
Thank God Forest lost.
Yeah, exactly. That really helped. I mean, I'm actually...
They were reeling us in.
I know, but for me, I don't see any value in the team that he put out, in the shape he put them out in the attitude he put them out in. I would far rather see, I mean, I know we always say this, and I'd rather see some of the younger players. I'd rather see Lewis Hall have a go again. I'd rather see some of the people get blooded so that they can just get a feel for it. We're not going up, we're not going down, we're going to be in and around. By the looks of it, maybe we'll end up at 15th or something. But give other people a chance.
He wasn't even on the bench.
The same. No, I know. And it, you know, when you see poor old Dave makes one huge run to keep up with Mbeumo in the first half, and then
that was him done.
That was him done.
After that, he was like, quick, take me off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Andy, do you not think there would have been more valuable in just giving... I'd rather lose 7-0 with a bunch of kids who go, my God, this is a real leap up. And I don't think they would. What do you think, Andy?
I don't think... not necessarily. I mean, I kind of see...
I'm only saying compared to this side that he's put
out. I know what you're saying. I'd like to see a little bit more ambition is what I'd like to see. I mean, when you've got Aubameyang, Pulisic, Felix, Mudrik, Ziyech and Madueke on the bench... and you put out Kante, Gallagher and Sterling, essentially, as your front three, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I said, you know, when I saw that team, it was like, tell me that you've chucked the towel in without telling me you've chucked the towel in. It's like, you know, honestly, I was kind of done. You know, it's like, what are you thinking? This is Brentford. Just go out there and if you lose 5-0, you lose 5-0, but show some ambition. Well, and what's the point of you if you're not going to do that? I mean, why are you trying not to lose? It's five in a row now, Frank. It's 1-19 as a manager. It's, you know, I love you as a player. You know, I think you're, you know, my favourite player. You'll always have a place in my heart for that. But you're not doing it as a manager, mate, I'm afraid. It's not happening, you know, and I can't get my head around it. I'm at a loss.
Gary, yeah, well, we're continually at a loss. We keep losing. But, I mean, Gary, do you think that Frank has actually, and we kind of talked about it in the past, but do you think he's actually realised that this job that he's taken for this short period of time, he's not going to get a note out of any of them? This is it, probably till the end of the season. I'm really not sure where our next point, if any, are coming from. I still think we will be all right on 39 points. But do you think he underestimated this? Or do you think he really thought he could make a difference, get into their heads, go on about the history of the club, the passion of the players, what it stands to mean for everybody? Or do you think he's just gone, oh my God, I had no idea. I don't have the skill set to put this into order.
I think it's all of that. It is all of it. Probably gone in thinking memories of what happened when he was there, like fans did. But we've said it on here. This isn't 2012. This isn't 2009. This isn't those teams where Hiddink can come in and save it just by going, what is it you did before? Yeah, do that. You know, Ancelotti came in, and the beauty of Ancelotti was he came in and saw it and went, I don't need to change much. I'll just do this, do that, let you do this. It's all good. But he's come in and he hasn't had that structure. But as someone who is very young in his managerial career, he's got, what, 4 seasons under his belt now? He's come in and found he's out of his depth of it, thinking, how do I do this? Because everything I've tried that I've, you know, recalled upon from when I was a player just isn't working with these players.
Do you think he's got a future as a top level manager?
I honestly don't know. I think what he needs to do is he needs to go away and have a sabbatical and do what a lot of, I don't know if this is common knowledge, what coaches do when they have a sabbatical. Go and plant yourself in Holland for 2 months and look at what Van Nistelrooy is doing at PSV. Look what they're doing at Ajax. Go to Spain for a month, see what they're doing. You know, go in and be a coach over there in terms of watching and just observing. And then go to Italy and see a bit of that. Take time out. Work out what your style is, what you want to achieve as a manager and how you want to achieve it. Then come back.
You know,
but then when you come back, you can't come back in the Premier League because it's just going to eat you up.
I'll do what Guardiola did. Go and hang out in New York for a year. Come back and win 5 league titles.
Yeah, and if you're going to Holland, I suggest that what you're saying is wrong. He should just go and eat some space cake, and then maybe all will become apparently clear.
And it wasn't great.
Yeah, but you get the fear. I can't imagine.
It might be Kerry that he does that and he starts leaving games like that at half time.
I can't cope with this. I have to go.
But in all
honestly,
seriousness,
though,
you
I
see
think
it all
he
the
left
time
that game at half time, mate.
Did he turn up?
Yeah. You should never have given him that gummy.
what happens at training grounds, you see it all the time, where you would see other coaches, you know, coming in, people that were out of work, and they would come in and they would, you know, they'd spend a few days with Jose, or they'd spend a few days with another manager, and they're just learning and just getting ideas and developing themselves. I think that's what he needs to do. It's something that not a lot of people have the courage to do, right? But some people do it. They go away, they reinvent themselves, they come back and they're better for it. But, you know, he needs to go and do it. He needs to take himself out of the spotlight, out of the firing line, and find a good championship club that's going to allow them to build something and then maybe bring them up and go from there. I don't know, but I think coming into Chelsea, look, I love the fact he's at Chelsea. I'm not going to apologise for him being there. I love the fact that Frank Lampard's in the dugout. I know this seat, it was, you said, Kerry, it was a free hit or whatever. I love the fact he's come back for the last 12 games.
Do you
or whatever,
still think it's a free hit, Kerry?
Yeah, because in the respect that we weren't doing anything, we still aren't doing anything. It is Frank. We're not going to go down. I think if we'd have got sucked into the relegation battle, I think it could have been awful. I think the only thing that's really awful for him is I think this does set his career back quite considerably.
So it's not a free hit, is it? That's my point.
Well, it depends. My term of free hit was that he's not going to alienate Chelsea fans, and I don't think he will in that respect.
I think you're They'll right. Just go, yeah, don't on that respect, I think you're right. I mean, my definition of a free hit was it doesn't hurt him and it doesn't hurt us. You know, it, in some ways, it doesn't really hurt us, apart from the fact it bores the hell out of me. And, you know, I think it's actually got worse under him. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know,
whoever was in charge, it was going to be
possibly,
like it,
yeah, possibly. But, you know, it does, as I was going to go and say, it doesn't really matter because we'll end up where we end up and, you know, we'll just, you know, with this season's already, it's already toast, isn't it? But so it doesn't really matter. But from his perspective, I actually think Kerry's right. I think it really has set his career back. And I think that he is going to really struggle now to be taken seriously definitely as a manager in the Premier League. I don't think he'll get a Premier League job. And, you know, he's really going to have to rethink the level at which he wants to and can manage now. So I don't think it's been a free hit for him. That was my point. I was always worried for him than I was for us.
No, that's fair comment. For me, I cannot see him managing full stop for a while. I think he probably needs to go. Perhaps he's got to do something similar to like JT, who started off trying to manage, didn't work out, didn't get the jobs, and has now gone to coaching.
I mean, how much leeway does he get compared to somebody that wasn't a legendary Premier League footballer? I mean, he's won one in 19 games as a manager. I mean, if that was, you know, a coach that didn't have that pedigree as a player, would they have got that kind of latitude?
They probably wouldn't have got the job in the first place, is the honest thing at this moment in their career. I think it's, and Gary and I have talked about this recently, the fact is everything's happened. Look, he probably should have stayed at Derby. He was actually doing very well there. He was getting a tune out of them. He brought on people like Mason Mount and helped him with his career. But he couldn't resist the draw and the lure of Chelsea because suddenly he had this opportunity when nobody else wanted it because it was a bit of a poison chalice at the time with everything that was going on. And he took it on. And I think that was the first of his mistakes. And I think then Everton was a mistake. And I think coming back to Chelsea was a mistake for him personally. I think he's now got to go the long way round. I don't think he's going to get the shortcut anymore. I think he's going to have to go in, perhaps be somebody's right-hand man. And actually, can he handle being somebody's right-hand man as opposed to being the number one person in the dugout? What do you think, Gary?
Well, going back to the Derby stuff, just quickly, I think when he came to Chelsea in 2019, it was a marriage of convenience, I think, because him being at Derby for a year, Chelsea arrived at the right time for him because he couldn't just walk out on that club. But I'm pretty certain he would have had an idea of the mountain of proverbial that was about to land on that club, which has happened since.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think they were banking on getting that promotion, which they got to the playoff final and lost out on, right? But, you know, I think about this and, you know, I've had a few people messaging me going, you know, almost like gloating, like, oh, I told you it wouldn't work or how do you feel now? It's like, well, one, you're a Chelsea fan. Why are you behaving like that? Two, I wasn't there preaching that this was going to be the greatest appointment ever anyway. I was just saying, look, I'm Chelsea to my core and I love the fact when someone that has got the history of the club that Frank Lampard has, that they are coming back and they're connected to the club somehow. We knew what the season was. We knew that the season was going nowhere. And before Frank even came in, I was advocating for Potter to stay until the end of the season when everyone was saying, get rid of him. And all these people, they just seemed to change their tune with whatever happens that day. And I'm thinking, well, where's your foresight on this? Because you wanted the manager gone. What was your solution? What, Zidane? Yeah, okay. This isn't Football Manager. This isn't FIFA, mate. This is real life. What was your solution outside of Potter? Lampard came in and look, I think that you ever read the book Julian Barnes' History of the World in 10.5 chapters?
I have, yeah.
Yes.
And there's the theme in that that is always it always comes back to, and you know, like when they have the journalist, you know, the guy on the ship when the terrorists come in, he uses his Irish passport so he gets away, and all this stuff. And the whole idea of it, Julian Barnes keeps coming back to, is that history repeats itself, first as tragedy, second as farce. And when Lamps went the first time, that was a tragedy. And everything, not because of him now, but he's got a role in it, this has also been, this has been the farce in that cycle. Everything has just been farcical, isn't it? The way he got appointed, the way everything's gone since then. So, you know, it is lamentable, but at the same time, what was the season going to be? Well, I don't think we'd be this much better off with Potter in charge the way it was. And because our problems are still the same. Our problems are very much the same. We just can't score goals. And, you know, I'm not going to keep talking, but I'll just say this one point as well, just to get it over and done with. But a few years ago, when Kerry and I were doing some tennis stuff together, we were watching Stan Wawrinka against Cameron Norrie at the Queen's Club. And Cam was just coming through, a young kid at the time. Now he's like a world top 10 player. And he was basically really forcing it against Wawrinka. And I just said to Kerry during the game, I said, Wawrinka's not even trying. All he's doing is waiting for Norrie to make a mistake. And that is Chelsea this season. Teams know we've got no punch. We can't score goals. And they just sit. Even the way Brighton pressed against us, it was like, let's just sit and wait here because they're going to make a mistake. And when they do, we'll pounce and score. And that's exactly what Brentford did. They got the lucky goal off Aspi after he was blowing out of his arse after sprinting once. The lucky goal there. And then they get another deflected goal, granted on the counter-attack. But it's just like teams now just like soak it up for them because we know they're not going to hurt us and then we'll get them when they make a mistake. And that's what's happened under Potter. It happened under Tuchel before. Now it's happened under Lamps. It's just a travesty that it keeps happening and happening.
Andy, do you not think also that until the changing rooms... Look, if you've got somebody like Thiago Silva, who really is one of the most likeable professional footballers we've had at the club in a long, long time, making statements about this needs to be sorted out and sending a very clear message to everyone at the club that there's so many things that are going wrong, need to learn, get a plan together so we don't make this mistake. The changing room's too small. We've had to extend it to fit all the players in. These are things that have to be addressed immediately. Otherwise, whoever comes in next is going to have the same sort of problem, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. Yeah. Obviously, you know, it's true. You know, I mean, I think that he's absolutely right to say that. You know, it does sort of lead us to a sort of worrying conclusion as to who's got the oversight on this, who's got the big picture vision. It's all right, very well bringing in a manager in, you know, like Pochettino. If it's going to be Pochettino, seems like it is. He might get a tune out of him. He's aggressive. He likes to play attacking football. He might be able to, you know, to instill some system in them that they buy into that suits the strengths of the squad, all that stuff that you hire a manager for, maybe he will. The slightly concerning thing is, who's thinking about all that other stuff? You know, the stuff that Thiago's talking about trimming the squad, about making sure that, you know, we've got a good transfer policy, making sure that we've got the infrastructure around the team to, you know, to be able to make sure we get a tune out of them. Who's thinking about that? That's my concern. There seems to be a massive void between the people that own the club, you know, Boley and Igbali and the manager. All that kind of soup in between, all those gloopy people in between, what are they doing? It doesn't feel like we have a coherent structure in the club that's everybody pulling in the same direction. It feels like you've got a manager and an owner and a load of other people who don't know what they're doing. Now, I think, and that's probably reductive to use the word that you used earlier, to think like that, but I just see big kind of vacuums everywhere. That's my issue.
Okay, well, look, we should go to a break and then we're going to come back and talk about what has to be done to make this a worthwhile proposition for the next man, who I think is obviously going to be Pochettino. But let's see, we'll go to the break and we'll come back straight after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
And we're back. Andy, you were talking a moment ago about this void that we've got to navigate through. Do you think that they have actually got their list? I mean, look, you speak to most fans, there's about 12 names all of us agree on that should go. And of course, we know now, and it seems to be coming out, that financial fair play means that a lot of those have to be done by the end of June. Are you thinking that now they've had a play time for the year of getting an idea in place, and now the reality of what it means to do these sort of things in a football club is different to other sports? Do you think that they have got their head screwed on, or are you hoping they've got their head screwed on who they want to move out? And does that not turn into a difficulty in a football world when people know that you need to sell?
Yeah, again, yeah. You're going into what is essentially a buyer's market. You know, we know that these players are not going to be part of, we assume these players are not going to be part of the long-term future of our club. You know, players like Ziyech and perhaps Pulisic and maybe Kovacic, you know, the ones that everybody's talking about. You know, maybe these players aren't, but they're on decent wages. And, you know, so the question is, the player doesn't have to go. We can't make them go. If they've got a contract that is going to be 2, 3, 4, even longer in some cases, they could just sit there and see their contracts out, you know, because unless somebody's going to put the 200, 300 grand a week on the, you know, on the table for them, they don't need to leave. You know, Ziyech wants to leave. You know, by all accounts, Pulisic wants to leave. But they're not cheap, these players. Even though we may not get a huge amount of money for them in terms of a fee, you know, it's the wages that's the problem. So hopefully we've got a plan around that. My concern is, yeah, you've got all these players. That's great. How many of them are actually ready? You know, how many of these players are ready? You know, we hear a lot about we bought players for the future, we bought young, you know, we've bought players that we hope in 3, 4, 5 years' time will be at their peak, that will have a resale value, that will add value to the team. But how many of those are actually ready? Because I think that's been an issue that's become really obvious this season. So how many of those need to go out on loan? Or how many of those need thinking about? And how many oven-ready, battle-hardened warriors do we have that can go out next season as an 11 and win football matches? You know, and do we have a balance in that team? And what do we need? You know, we obviously need a goal scorer. We probably need a new keeper. We probably need another midfield player. All the stuff that we've talked about ad infinitum on this podcast, all that stuff, who's thinking about that? That's what I'm talking about, the void. You know, it doesn't seem to have any coherence in it at the moment. I'm not confident in it. All those issues seem to be swirling around. And you know, unless something is done about that, the manager's going to find themselves in exactly the same position as those other three people that Gary talked about earlier.
And Gary, do you think the team that are now in place properly and apparently duties have now been farmed out correctly, that we're going to see this team move into action? I presume we're hoping it moves into action. How can you see this period panning out for Chelsea? Because as Andy says, that we have got a team potentially for the future. We need some proper battle-hardened players, don't we?
Well, we've said it for a long time. Too much of the same thing. Look, there's clearly structure in place now. Whether that structure is going to be working as efficiently as you'd hope it would after the first 6 to 9 months of it being in place. Obviously, it's not a cop-out, but it's just strict time will tell. We can't sit here and say what the summer's going to be like, right, until they get moving and you start seeing the moves they're making, because we're just going to be guessing. And you know, we're not guessing based on any evidence of anything else. We're just going to be guessing. But we're going to be guessing what these people are doing. They've already made a move quick by getting rid of the manager. Now, I think they got rid of him at the wrong time. They should have just got rid of him at the end of the season. But then they've done that, so they're going to have a new guy in place by the end of the season, in terms of them just being lined up to come in. So they're getting ahead of the game in that sense, but like Andy said, there's a big, big problem at Chelsea in terms of getting rid of these players. And because you've got so many of them, clubs are just going to come in and undercut you and just say, look, we know you need to get rid, so we're not going to give you the money we should for these. We will give you 10 million less, or we will give you X for this player, because if not, well, try getting him else, you know, try sending him elsewhere where they're not going to have the money either. So, and you've got to think the level of money Chelsea are looking for with these players, it's a very niche market of clubs that can buy them. You know, look at Ziyech, for instance. The fact that PSG missed out on him, will they come back in the summer for him? Let's hope they do. Because I know it was only a loan, but that would have been a loan with a view to buy. But then I think you can start seeing, talking of plans, how the conversation is starting to change around certain players as well. Like Felix now, it's not talk of a £100 million signing, it's another loan. They're talking about taking him for a season loan because they're planning, right? They're thinking, look, we want him, he's in the future, but we will we'll take him on loan before we buy because of the financial fair play implications of it, right?
Interesting you talk about a sort of niche market. I think some of these are actually niche players. I mean, Ziyech is a very niche player, isn't he? And as is Pulisic. They're not players that you can just slot into any team. You know, they have to, you know, the team has got to have a philosophy and a formation and a vision to accommodate them. And I don't think a lot of, every team has that. They're not like a player like a striker or a centre-back or someone that you can just slot into a team. They're kind of flair players. They've got to fit a particular manager's vision. You know, this was always the issue with, for example, Jorginho, wasn't it? It's like, you know, unless you play a certain way, Jorginho is not going to be for your team. So that's another thing that's concerning, is there's only certain teams that these players can go to, I think. I mean, I'm happy to be contradicted on it, but that's my sort of gut feeling on it, is that it's not going to be easy to sell these players as a result.
No, I think these are all absolutely spot on comments. My other thing is, we surely feel that it's absolutely right that Pochettino's coming in. But we also know that Pochettino was being considered along with Potter, and they chose Potter. Why do you think, Gary, that they chose Potter over Pochettino first time round?
Why did the Conservative Party pick Liz Truss over Rishi Sunak?
Well, maybe you can answer as a right-wing Tory. Both questions.
I didn't vote for Liz or Rishi. Yeah. I wanted Boris back.
God. Listen, why did you go down that rabbit hole, Kerry?
I wanted an oven-ready plan.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I knew who I wanted to put in the oven.
What was your question? Why did they not go for Pochettino first?
Why did they choose Potter over Pochettino, do you think? Do you think it's because he was more controllable, they thought?
Maybe.
Of a company man that hadn't had the experience, they could mould him into the kind of character they wanted?
Yeah, but then, yeah, they might have just seen it in terms of the whole structure and the steady growth, and they thought they could ease their way into it, and they've realised they can't now, that they need to get results quicker maybe. So they thinking we've got someone who is oven ready. I don't know. I don't see the logic in it that you sack one guy and then you bring in the guy that you could have got when you got the other guy. I don't know. Maybe they were close to both and someone had more will than the other person. I don't know.
Andy, you got your hand up.
Look, I think, and this is going to sound, you know, a little bit cheap, but I think Potter probably came in with a PowerPoint presentation. And what I mean by that is that I think he's a very strategic manager. And I think for Americans, being able to go in and pitch a vision in a very strategic way, in a very thought-out, process-driven way, probably appealed to them after the emotion of Tuchel. And they were looking for someone that, and they talked about sharing the vision, sharing the ideals. And those ideals are, you know, pretty corporate, I think, in the way they looked at it. Pochettino's an emotion manager. You know, he's somebody that, you know, that goes out there, and I think he probably is strategic. You don't get to manage it unless without it. But I think he is very emotional. So they probably didn't want that first time round and are realising that actually a little bit of that is quite important. And that somebody having a bit of fire in their belly and a bit of emotion and going in there and sorting things out is actually probably what they need. And they needed to go through that process to get there. So I'm going to give them a little bit of a break on it and basically say they went through that process with the strategist, and now they've got the kind of emotional firebrand in there who's going to go in there and start to really pull these disparate strings together.
Do you think, Gary, that there's any chance that just maybe if they are dealing with Pochettino, that actually he's already having a look at everything, working everything out. He's got to be already on it, hasn't he? Do you think maybe they've even done the deal?
Well, I don't know if they've done the deal because they would announce it because they don't want to drag it on, right? But the moment he gets appointed is the moment that he's down at Cobham and he's not going to be on social media and he's not going to be, you know, in the way of Lampard and the current coaching team, but he's going to be constantly in conversation with them. He's going to be watching training videos. He's going to be watching the matches. He's going to be breaking down performances. He's going to be analysing player data because he's going to want to work out as well. And this is where I think that it could be a good thing for whoever does come in, whether it is Pochettino or not, and the way they have done stuff, is that they've got time to really, really plan. They haven't got to come in and go, take training, you're playing tomorrow. There's time here, right? So Pochettino, even if he hasn't signed the contract yet, is doing his due diligence on that squad and where, because he's going to come in with his demands and whoever the manager is, and they're going to say, well, you're getting rid of Mason Mount, you've got to keep him for me. Or actually, I support you letting him go. So there's going to be a whole load of issues, and it takes time to assess the players in the squad and whoever it is. If it's Pochettino, of course he's looking at them now. Of course he's analysing and seeing who he can rely on and who he can't.
Andy, there's a lot in what Gary says there. I was watching the Formula One yesterday, and there was a really interesting moment where one of the teams sent out a car that wasn't particularly good, and it kind of spluttered around the circuit, obviously broken very slowly. And the commentators were asking one of the strategists, why would they do that? Why would they even send this car out? It's embarrassing, right? And there was a pause, and the strategist said, for the data. And, you know, they get so much data from it, from that car going around in those conditions, that they can then use that data, even though it's bad data, if you see what I mean, to improve. And I think there's an element of taking the data from this season. And Gary talked about analysing player performances, breaking down performances. All that data's there. It's very sophisticated these days. If he's got the right team around him to analyse that data, you know, and I don't mean it in the cold, hard sort of binary code sense, but in the sense of what actually happened. Can we break down and see what happened? Then I think he stands a chance of being able to fix it. But it's going to take that kind of approach.
And that's why I didn't laugh at Potter when he spoke about the XG of Villa's second goal by John McGinn. Because what he was trying to say there is, defensively, we're not that bad. But obviously, he was talking coach's talk to people in the press room that were just and because they don't quite understand it and they frown upon this talk, they see it as cliche. But you speak to coaches, this is the way they talk with each other. You sit in the coach's room, this is the way they're talking. These are the conversations they're having. This is the language they're using. They don't use the language we do as a bunch of numpties that are pissed up on the terraces. You know, they use a whole different language. They've got their own language. That's the way they talk, and they look at things. They look at sprints and everything. And you might wonder why a player's getting in the team. Well, he gets in a team because he does a certain amount of carries and what those carries represent in terms of the press and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But and that's what Pochettino will be doing now. He'll be looking at it, and if he wants to keep Mason Mount, I'll use Mason Mount as an example because he is a big point of contention at the moment. But if he wants to keep Mason Mount, he's going to come in with that demand, right? If I'm going to manage your team, I need a player like him and you need to keep him because the system we're going to play is X. And in order to do that, we need players that do Y and Z, you know, and he's going to be doing it. Of course he's going to be doing that. He's probably doing it and negotiating it as part of his contract because he knows if it is Pochettino, he knows he's in an incredibly powerful position now that you turned me down before and you come back because it went horribly wrong. So you've got to give me more of what I want this time.
Yeah. And just on a quick point, it was Yuki Tsunoda in the Formula One yesterday. It was an extraordinary moment. But I totally get that whole thing about the data. Yeah, so much can be learnt. But all right, well, look, we have got a couple of games coming up this week. One, of course, is the Arsenal game, and then we've got Bournemouth away. Both of these look like huge, sort of dangerous games for Chelsea now. How is Frank going to approach this, Andy?
I hope he approaches it with a bit of ambition. I hope he doesn't think you can just sit back for 90 minutes with a bunch of defenders and midfielders and somehow it's all going to be all right. I genuinely, against a team like Arsenal, I don't think it is. We know that they've got fragilities up front. I mean, their problem in the last five or six games is conceding goals. And I think that if you get at a team like Arsenal, the pressure they're under at the moment is enormous. And, you know, they are going to be a little bit wobbly. You know, however, they, you know, they're a good team. They haven't stopped being a good team. You know, they can score goals. They can hurt you. So you need a little bit of solidity there. But just shutting up shop against them, I think he's just playing into their hands. So I hope he goes there and plays at least three attacking players and goes out there with a sense of, look, we've had a hard time. But, you know, they're trying to win the title and they're choking. You know, they're really under pressure. You know, let's put our foot on their neck and see what they do, because, you know, it's going to be a really nervous crowd in that Emirates Stadium. You know, they know that if they lose this game, if they draw this game, they have effectively blown the title. A lot of people saying they've blown the title already, but if we can somehow shit out a draw out of this, we finish them. They're finished. They're done. So it's going to be a really nervous crowd there. And I think we've got to embrace that. Go out there and see what we can do. It's always teams like us at this time of the season that do stupid things like beat Arsenal. I mean, I think it's a game me and Gary really wanted to go to this game, didn't we, Gary? But we couldn't get a ticket. But I genuinely think this could be a little bit more interesting than people think.
Okay. And what about Bournemouth as well then, Gary? Anything to add on Arsenal? And then I'll get both your predictions.
I hope he plays Aubameyang, because when Aubameyang came on at half-time against Villa, what did Chelsea suddenly start doing? Not because Aubameyang is the saviour, but because we had a striker on who knows how to play that role. Suddenly, we had four or five players in the box. It obviously didn't work out, we didn't score, but we looked much more of a threat than we had in the first half. I hope we go and play with Aubameyang through the middle, because as you say about a free hit for Lampard when he came back, playing Aubameyang now for the last five games is a free hit for Chelsea.
He'd love to score against Arsenal, wouldn't he?
Yeah. But then the last six games. What is the worst that can happen for Chelsea with Aubameyang right now? He doesn't score some goals? Okay, well, he hasn't really done much all season. What's the best that can happen? Oh, shit. We just played him for six games. He got his motivation up. He got his mood up. He banged in five goals towards the end of the season. We've got a problem that we need to get a striker, but we've got a guy we can keep happy for a year. Maybe he can do something next season as well if we do bring someone in. And suddenly the whole dynamic changes, right?
You just need something like that to happen.
Yeah. you've got
to make things happen, right? You've got to try something. Everything else that Tuchel tried, that Potter tried, that Lampard tried has failed, right? So what is the one thing you've got left? You've got Aubameyang as, I wouldn't say the ace up your sleeve, but whatever, the joker up your sleeve maybe. I don't know how that works, the metaphor of it, but you know the point I'm making, right? And, you know, maybe Chelsea can springboard by doing Arsenal. You know, can I just say about Arsenal as well? Everyone's going on about what a great season they've had and everything. If they win every game between now and the end of the season, they're only getting 90 points still. They're getting 90 points in a weak Premier League season when Chelsea and Liverpool have been in transition. The Premier League hasn't been as competitive in terms of the top teams and whatnot. That Man City are in transition. I've said it for so long. This is Arsenal's 2015-16. When we drew with Spurs and gifted Leicester the title, this is that Spurs season for Arsenal. Arsenal won't be here next year. To finish on 90 points after their best season in 20 years, that is not a good season. Chelsea were winning the title on 93-95. Obviously, subsequently, Man City have done it with 100. You know, Liverpool have got 98 and not won the title. This is not a great season for Arsenal. This is not a great Arsenal team. I don't care what anyone says. The fact we are where we are just says it all about us. But this isn't a good Arsenal team either. A great Arsenal team. They're doing all right. But this is an anomaly in a season unlike any other. They're not going to be here next year.
Andy, you're just going to make a point there.
Yeah, listen, you know, you said it earlier in the podcast. You know, if we go in down in flames on Tuesday, trying to play, trying to take it to them, putting ourselves about, showing a bit of spirit and a bit of passion, like we did in the second leg of the Real Madrid game, you know, when we actually went out there for 60 minutes and tried to take the game to him. If we go out there and we lose 4 or 5-0, I genuinely will applaud and we'll just say, I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you just went out there and tried to play football and did what you could. But if we go out there and play the same formation and the same type of team that we played against Brentford, you know, I'm just going to get depressed, because why? Why would we do that? Doesn't make any sense. That's all I wanted to say. Go out there, show some ambition.
Okay, well, look, let's get predictions. We've also got Bournemouth at the weekend. That's the strangest case of a dead team that suddenly then became alive. I mean, there they were, adrift at the bottom of the table, and now they're if they win, I think they go above us, don't they? So, you know.
Well, depending on our result against Arsenal. Exactly, but imagine if someone said to Gary O'Neill at the start of the season, Gary, it's going to be early May and you're playing Chelsea at home, and if you beat him, you go above him, he's going to think, bloody hell, we're winning the league.
Exactly.
And all you're doing, mate, is you're going to go to 12th.
But, all right, well, look, let's get some predictions. I'm going to go first for a change. I'm going to go Arsenal 0, Chelsea 1. A real rip-roarer of a game. And then I'm going to go Bournemouth 2, Chelsea 3. There you go. Who'd like to go next? Andy?
I'm going to go for draw at the Emirates. I'm going to say 1-0. I think Arsenal are going to score early, and then we're going to score an 89th minute and destroy their title hopes. You know, that's heart overhead, but, you know, it's possible, isn't it? Everything's possible. Bournemouth, I mean, God, I mean, really? To get the enthusiasm up for this game, I'm going to go draw. I'm going to go 1-1 again. You know, I think it's, you know, I just don't think we can score goals, Kerry. That's the problem. So I think, you know, we'll score a goal. They'll probably score a goal. It'll be a draw. We'll all have a Chinese that night and it'll be fine. You know, it's like, you know, really? Can't wait for this season to end.
Exactly.
Can you wait for this season to end? Are you still excited about the football this season, or would you rather just kind of move on?
No, I just want it done, dusted. We shouldn't even be playing. This should be about the last game of the season coming up. It's just, it's just dragged on and on and on, and painfully so. And I don't think it's just for us. I think there's been a lot of clubs who've had very painful seasons this year. Whether we blame that on the World Cup or everything that's gone before, and finally everyone needs a summer to reset. Gary, your last thoughts on predictions, please, your scores?
Arsenal 2, Chelsea 3, Aubameyang hat-trick.
Yeah.
Love it.
Bournemouth 0, Chelsea 1.
Excellent. And Aubameyang scores again.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's good. He's got a 4-goal week
back
coming
to back
up.
Wins for
I
Frank.
Like it. Absolutely. Give him the job full time. That's going to be next week's podcast, I think. And maybe not. All right. Well, look, we are out of time. Thank you ever so much, as always, Andy and Gary. This has been an interesting time chatting about the week that was, and looking forward to whatever happens next. Anyway, come on, Chelsea. Come on, you Blues.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.